All right. So peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to this week's Black Wallets Matter Town Hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be your host this evening. If this is your first time calling in, we want to do a little housekeeping and run down the rules of how we manage these calls. They usually last for about 2 hours if we have a really good one. If everyone wants to get off early, then we can cut the call short. So let me just say in advance, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us tonight. I hope you're feeling inspired and empowered because you are now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of discussing solutions to many of the problems we face in our community in an organized and an intelligent manner. So if you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and as a sign of solidarity. During these calls, we do not like to discuss religion, we do not like to discuss the black male-female dynamic, and we do not like to discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to black people here in America and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into a discussion about which party did this and which party didn't do that because these are all opinion-based topics, and we'll be here going around and around in circles all night and not making any progress. So for all the guests on the call, this is your first time, I want to tell you what this organization is about. If you haven't watched the blueprint on our website yet, Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spend $1.3 to $1.4 trillion a year. So if we were to pool our resources and practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. That's what the purpose of this Black Wallets Matter Member Association is. We want to bring together a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in our community and are motivated to take action. We want brothers and sisters who believe that the first step to solving our problems is unity and then investing in ourselves and our people. You see, what we have is a systematic problem with the oppression and racism and the injustices we face. So what we need is a systematic solution. We have never taken the time to build a system to counterbalance the oppression and the injustices we face, and that's why nothing has ever worked for us before. Building the system that we're talking about will require patience because there are a lot of things that we don't know how to do. For instance, we need to learn how to organize and cooperate with one another. We need to learn how to set our differences aside and learn to agree to disagree, right? So with the support of a few intrepid brothers and sisters and a well-thought-out plan, we think that we can at least get headed in the right direction and we can create this system for others to follow. And that's what the blueprint video on our website, it provides our roadmap. It provides our plan from soup to nuts, from how we start from where we are now to where we get to. It provides a structure for how to build the system that will counterbalance the injustices we face using our existing resources. All right? So I just want to say to everyone on this call tonight, if you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you've had enough of what's going on in our community and you are really, really working towards change or you're looking for some direction, then I want to let you know that this may be the organization for you. We are an organization that, even though we didn't cause the problems that we face, we believe that we are going to be responsible for fixing those problems and getting ourselves out of this quagmire. We are about self-responsibility and accountability. Like I said, we didn't cause these conditions that we suffered, but we can't just sit here and act like, you know, we're cool with it. So like I said, we want to build a system. So let me just give you an idea of what it is, that the system that this organization wants to build. The overall goal is to realistically change the economic, political, and social conditions of our people here in America. It may take a generation or two to achieve the goal, and it will require a sacrifice from those of us who can to do for those of us who can't. We want our future generations, that's your children, my children, our grandchildren, We don't want them to suffer the same oppression and injustices that we are facing today, and definitely not the type of injustices that those who came before us suffered. Right? We want them to have it better than us. We have the tools, the technology, and the know-how to put certain protections in place for them now, and that includes wealth and political influence. So, like I said, if you're sick and tired of these conditions and you're willing to set aside your differences, regardless of religious, political beliefs, sexual orientation, and all these other different things, so that the black community, so that, you know, and create this group with us so that we can build a black economy and have money to solve our problems, then we want to work with you. Other ethnic and social groups have proved that the model that we're talking about, it works, right? You can look at the Jewish and the LGBT community, right? These are people who have put their differences aside in terms of political beliefs and all these other different little differences, and they have decided to work together for the collective. And what they have done is they have focused on building their economic power so that they could therefore have political power. And now we all know the types of protections that they have legally by law, the Jewish community and the LGBT community. And those are the same types of protections. They use the same laws that were put on the books for us to protect and enforce the protection of their people. So there's absolutely no reason why we can't do it. So one of the challenges that we face is that we can't get everyone on board. We're not going to have everyone understand that this needs to be the plan. Many of you on the call have undoubtedly reached out to someone, your brother, sister, cousin, and tried to say, hey, let's do something. Let's try to build something. Things need to change. And they may agree, but then they never take any action, right? That's what the problem is. But what we're trying to do is reach out all across the country and try to bring together like-minded brothers and sisters who are saying, today is the day that I am ready to take action. I am ready to stand with a like-minded brother or a like-minded sister, even though she may be in Houston, Texas, even though he may be in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, wherever. I want to be able to stand and unite with them in order to at least start building this system, building this blueprint, so that those that come behind us at least know where to start. So one of the things that we tried to do last year, we tried to roll out local chapters to help individuals start rebuilding and, you know, putting things together in their community. That proved problematic because although we had people who were saying they were willing and able, the blueprint for how to do it, for how to take a group of unrelated people, for how to take people that you technically have no authority to enforce anything on, how to get them together to work together and execute a plan. And that is a challenge that we're going to face if we want to see improvement through all the black communities that need it. It's one of the hurdles that we have to face, is one that we have to overcome. And this organization is dedicated to working towards that. We're dedicated to finding out how to do all the little things that we don't know how to do, and then documenting that, and then rolling that out, right? So if any of that makes sense to you, then, again, like I said, this may be an organization for you. So let me give you an idea of what we can do as a group of like-minded brothers and sisters. So when we say our black wallets matter, doesn't necessarily mean that we spend our black dollars. It can mean that we can withhold them from businesses and entities that do not respect our patronage or have our best interests in mind. Let me make sure that you guys can hear me. Okay. Yep. So we want to make sure that people are respecting our black dollars. We are the biggest spenders in the American economy. So you can believe if we united and boycotted certain businesses, we could have a major impact on the U.S. economy. And realistically, that's the kind of action that we're going to need to take. We're going to have to band together and do something. We have to show the rest of the world that we understand how the economy works. When they understand that we know how the game is played, they will leave us alone, or they'll stop messing with us to the degree that they are right now. Because right now, our rights are totally being violated at every turn, and they know that they can get away with it. There's no one doing anything. Yeah, sure, you'll have some people who get upset, they'll march, they'll protest, But they've already prepared for that stuff. They boost up the insurance, and then what they're doing now, from what I understand, is they're going back around and they're suing the actual protesters. They're arresting individual protesters, and there's really no money there to defend the protesters, you know, set up legal funds and things like that for them in some cases. And what's happening is that's breaking down the ranks. We need a more structured way to go about getting the things that we want. We can't go out there whining, kicking and screaming, marching and protesting. We need to be organized and systematic in the way that we do. If you, in recent memory, you can remember when they beat up the Asian guy on the airplane, United Airlines immediately lost something like $800 million, and I think it went on to be something like $1.2 billion. Eventually, all of the Asian people, they just boycotted that airline immediately. When Trump imposed that travel ban, you see all the everyone, it seems like they lost their mind, but all of the Muslim population, they got together and raised $24.1 million over the weekend and had their lawyers go in there and overturn that executive order, right? So that's power. We have a larger percent of population than all of these people, right? The Asians, I think they're only like maybe 2 or 3% of the population. I have no idea what the Muslim population is, right? We're, what, about 13% of the population. 42 million of us, 43 million of us. That's a lot of people. And so if we were to corral our folks, have them get behind certain things that benefit us all, you can believe we would have a major impact. So let me just tell you what this organization, the priorities of this organization. The priorities of this organization is to address black poverty, it is to address black unemployment, and it is to address this recent wave of racially motivated police brutality. The reason we are focused on these issues is because we are thinking about the babies. We are thinking about the future generation. The reason how we're going to help the children by addressing poverty is the vast majority of children that grow up to wind up getting in trouble, they come from impoverished households because either the mother is working, there's no father there, or something like that. And so the child winds up getting in trouble, going out in the street, becoming a drug dealer, a gangbanger, or something like that. Unemployment. Again, if the mother, sometimes these single mothers, they're working 2 and 3 jobs or whatever, or, you know, sometimes if there is a father, he's not making enough. Again, that causes problems in the home because that child doesn't have a loving, nurturing environment. And so if we're able to stem the tide of the underemployment amongst our people, that will help create a better environment for these children. That will provide more opportunities for their parents to invest in their well-being. And then the racially motivated police brutality. Obviously, we do not want these children that, you know, we invest in to grow up to become productive members of society and then have law enforcement with just, you know, believing that they can just go around, you know, taking these kids' lives. They've been killing unarmed brothers and sisters like crazy, right? And so it would break our hearts to have children who are young, minding their business, you know, maybe on their way to work or coming from some type of sporting events or whatever it is. And then that child's life is snuffed out, and then that officer gets a paid vacation, a slap on the wrist, and like maybe some type of desk duty or something, right? So we have to put these protections in place. We have to make this investment in our organization. And like I said, this is what Black Wallets Matter is about. So how we plan on getting to these accomplishments, how we plan on accomplishing these goals, we are looking for 2,000 founding members to help us build this system. We're not going to build the entire system. We're going to just build the first step, 2,000 founding members. And the reason why we want 2,000 founding members is because with the membership dues that we collect from founding members, we will be able to create our first business. And that business will do 2 things. It will prove to the rest of our brothers and sisters that, hey, a group of unrelated black men and women can come together, can organize to build something of benefit for us all. We can cooperate. That's going to help us learn how to work together, how to pool our resources, and how to create something that is beneficial for the community. That's essentially what's going to have to happen in Tuscaloosa, in South Carolina, in Atlanta, in Detroit. That is that type, that form of group economics is going to have to be the blueprint. So we're going to have to figure it out. Our membership dues are very small. It is $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold level, $50 at the platinum level. That is a negligible amount of money for some. $10 is negligible. And with that money, there's no one taking any big risk or committing any type of money that, you know, they lose it, they're gonna, you know, they're no longer gonna have a roof over their head. That is going to allow us to build the model to roll out across the country. The second thing, what else that's going to do, once we roll that model out, other brothers and sisters are going to take notice, and they are going to come on board either with this organization, or they're going to form organizations of their own, or they may want to partner with us, or whatever it is. And then that is how we're going to go around and realistically make a change in the Black community. All of that, all of the money, all of the profits that's generated from from this organization is going to be used to go towards a community resource center. The community resource centers will be places where children can walk in without hanging out. You know, they don't have to hang out in the street. They can walk into the community resource center. They can learn computer programming. They can learn, some type of trade, some type of usable skill that will allow them to have gainful employment in the future, maybe learn entrepreneurship so they can start and create a business. That's the type of investment that we're going to need to make in for the future. Alone, none of us have that kind of money that needs to go into that. But together, we have it. If I believe, this is just my belief, right, and this is based on watching our elites, our athletes and entertainers, right, no one has made this type of investment, one, because there isn't a system. There's no system set up where they can put their money in and then these children will come out on the other side, productive, progressive, with the skills necessary to go out in the world. The other reason I believe that no one does it is it's such a big undertaking. And so an athlete or an entertainer or whatever, his job is to play sports or entertain, and it requires a lot of time. It needs to be, I believe, the investment of the rest of us, a bunch of little people making something big happen. That's what I truly believe. Because I don't believe any single one of us have the energy and the time and the patience that is going to require to build something like this. We're going to have to hire a lot of different people. This thing requires a lot of moving parts. And that's what we're trying to do. And so we would like to invite you to join us, join our organization, become a member at either the silver level for $10 a month, at the gold level for $25 a month, or $50 a month at the platinum level, and help us build this system that we're talking about. We just need to get one off the ground so that we can use it as a proof element for the rest of the brothers and sisters in the country. So usually we talk about how the money is managed, and, you know, we talk about how we get to right? So these things are going to be multi-million, $1 billion. And we usually talk about that as well. But, you know, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. We just need to get to 2,000 founding members. Right now we have about 400 or so. So if everyone would just do their part, if what we're saying resonates with you, if what I'm saying to you makes sense, then come on board and we will help you you can help us build this beautiful thing. So we're not a nonprofit organization. We're structured as a B Corp, but we have a nonprofit organization that we are affiliated with. And as of recently, we've been enabling our members to write off their membership dues. So if you're wondering, okay, well, you know, how does the money work and things like that, whatever it is that you contribute as a membership due, you will be able to write that off on your taxes next year if we don't hit our financial targets. right? Because once we're structured at the B Corp, then once we have our other business going in, there's other legal situations that take place there, but we will be in a much better situation. So you have that that protection in regards to the contribution you make. You also have the ability to cancel your membership at any time or even ask for a refund. So if you make a contribution to this organization and you're unhappy, you can just say, hey, Brother Lou, you know what? Cancel my membership and, you know, give me my money back. And you can have that. All the other extra little questions, they are available on our website, blackwalletsmatter.org. You can look at the FAQs, the frequently asked questions, and it breaks down a lot of the little minute, mundane questions. So if anyone has any comments, then I'm going to put it in Q&A mode. But what I would really like to do is I would really like to bring a topic to the floor so that we can begin discussing some solutions is what I would really like to do. So let me bring the first topic to the floor. Just give me a second here. All right, so what I want to ask everyone, why is it so hard for us to work together? Why, like in your opinion, right? So everyone on this call has undoubtedly tried to work with someone before. What is it that prevented you from working with the person or them from working with you? Why is it so hard for our people to work together when we know we have these big problems facing us? Every time we turn around, there's something major going on in our community. It's something that upsets us all, and yet we still, it just hasn't, like, galvanized us enough to move in the right direction to resolving that problem. So from anyone who's on the call, anyone who has any input or any insight into that, even if you were the one who, you know, walked away from the thing, what led you to say, forget the bigger picture, let me walk away? And the reason we're asking that is, like I said, we're really trying to figure out one of the biggest hurdles that we're going to have is working together. I've learned that. I've had a bunch of people curse me out in this organization, or people say they disagree with me for the smallest things. And so that makes them say, all right, you know what, I don't want anything to do with Black Wallace Matter. That's, you know, usually I let it rub off, you know, don't even think about it. But then I'm actually thinking, I'm like, we're never going to make progress because that's usually what we do. So if anyone wants to share, chime in on that, please press *6. All right. Brother ST.
Yes, sir, Brother Lou. I found that one of the biggest problems that we have as racist people is that when we come up with an idea, we think it's a great idea and it's a perfect solution. We have in our mind all the dynamics and the mechanics of it, but the people who are supporting it, they don't fully understand the full vision of it. I think we've got to sit down and present our plan, and let's kick around and, you know, have different inputs and see if we can just tweak it to the point where it satisfies everyone and it's acceptable to everyone, and we can go out and try it. But a lot of times, you know, we'll have a vision and we'll try to implement the vision, and if you don't understand the total concept of the vision, it's hard to get on board and support it. So I think we need to educate the participants on, you know, the end goal and what it's supposed to accomplish and everything, and have everybody come on board and, you know, approve of it.
I think trying to do that is where the problem happens, because everyone wants to argue about the details. I watch this This is the reason why I'm bringing this up. So between our last meeting, between our meeting last week and this week, I was actually like a fly on the wall is what I was doing. So I understood the plan that the brother presented. It was a brother and a sister. It was a man and they were a wife and husband couple. I watched what they presented. Sounds good. Made sense to me. They obviously did the research. I sat there and watched the rest of the people sit there instead of saying or qualifying what they're going to say. Hey, listen, I'm just playing devil's advocate, and then mention something contrary. They were just objecting to every single little point. A lot of times was not even really understanding what they were talking about. And so, and it dawned on me, it's like we all say we need to do something, and then we start arguing over the details. And I'll tell you what happened. That whole conversation was so exhausting. I had to tune it off. I had to tune out. But the husband and wife team who brought the thing, who proposed it, they were so exhausted. They were just tired of talking about making any progress or whatever. And they were like, forget it then. And that's what happened. I mean, it was a really good idea. So, I mean, it's like the details, we always get so mired in the details. So the vision was laid out. Our vision is there. We still have people who get mired in the details.
Well, my thing is this. We need to. Charity starts at home, if I may use that cliche.
Yeah.
We just started with each other's home and surroundings, just the little necessary things we need to do to maintain our homes and our yards and so forth, and just keep the community spruced up and make the community respectable and presentable to the rest of the community, rest of the other communities at large, and they can say, well, look, those people over there, they really got it together. But we got to patronize each other in that respect. And we instead of trying to go out to the other ethnic groups and so forth and generate some money with them, it's hard. But if you're doing it at home, we should understand what we're trying to do. And just little things like washing windows, washing cars, cutting the grass, you know, just little things like that, and doing things for the elderly in the community. And just have like a phone bank where people can call and say, well, look, I need this done. Do we have anybody who can do this? You know? And I think that'll go a long ways toward bringing us together cohesively if we can do that. But let's start working on each other. And once we work on each other, then we can expand out. And people see what we're doing in our own community. They say, hey, look, some people over here, they got it going on. And when we expand out to other communities, they may be receptive to us. But that's just my thought on it. But that's just a thought I threw out there for consideration.
Good suggestions, brother. Good suggestion. Thank you. All right. So now we have Brother Leonard. Yes, Brother Leonard.
Greetings, Brother Lou, and greetings to the rest of the brothers and sisters that are on the call. Your question was, why do we struggle working together? Basically, it's a cultural collectivity that is non-existent among us. So it's really not our fault. The fault lies in us wanting to change. Now, I say this to say that I work in a field where I've worked many years with Hispanics. And I've worked with Armenians. So when you're the only one and you're working with other people, you really don't have a choice but to study them because you see things that they do that we don't do. And so when an opportunity presents itself, and if I'm in an Armenian environment, they go out and get another Armenian to join. They don't go get an Asian. They don't go get a Hispanic. When I'm working with the cooks in the restaurant business, if I ask for a dishwasher, they don't bring me a black kid. They bring me another Hispanic. I say to say this, that many of us are highly educated, but the part that we miss is the cultural collectivity because rather than say the very thing that you were talking about, if you study us, you'll say, you'll come up with an idea, and rather than saying the first thing out of your mouth, man, I am glad to hear someone has taken the reins, I want to support you. The first thing you start hearing is, what about this? What about that? And where did that come from? I wasn't taught that through my parents, so where does it come from? It comes from because we don't have the culture of collectivity, and we know it stems from slavery. And it has to stem from slavery because they took away our language, they took away our cultures. So with the education that many of us have, we go and get our own education, but how often do we go back and create the attitude that Harriet Tubman did? She always went back and got her people. So we can make this happen, because your question is almost a two-part question. The question is to educate us to create dialogue, but in order for us to get to 2,000 people, which we will, is we all have to think the same. See, you don't have to convince me, and I don't have to convince you. And for the people that are on the call for the first time, Brother Lou always says this, but I encourage you, before you ask any questions about the organization, please go to blackwalletsmatter.org. It's not .com, .org. Go to the menu and listen to the blueprint. And it's completely covered on what we're going to do, and it's strictly organized. But as I said before, the cultural collectivity doesn't exist. See, when you say, or when you hear the stats, we're 1.3 trillion, and if we were on an island, we'd be the ninth richest country in the world.
Yes.
But yet and still, the money stays only 6 hours in our communities. Okay, Asian, it stays 28 days, and you already know the rest. So that cultural collectivity, they don't know anything else but to keep their money, but not with us, because the cultural collectivity was taken away. So part of the developing this organization and many other organizations is the cultural collectivity needs to be to the forefront, and that means education. And then the other thing, my last point, is so many brothers and sisters that are on this call or even across the nation have excelled in what their skill set is or their profession. And I'm going to tell you, 9 times out of 10, I can even go 8 out of 10, you will hear them say they were the first one or they were the only one that made it to this particular position. So rather than come back and help us, they feel that they've reached their goal, and it's really hard for them to go back and help us or help those that need help or cross-collaborate. But that's all I have, and that's why I find that it's a struggle, because we're missing a cultural collectivity.
Okay, and so we know this, and so the education, right? So many of us are set in our ways, right? We have knee-jerk reactions to when we hear things. Perfect example. You said, you know, you asked the Spanish guy, hey, I need another dishwasher. He goes and he gets another Spanish guy. And I'm saying to myself, all right, cool. No, you go get another brother. But then you know what else crept in my head? It was like, you know what, man, I would go get this guy his job, then he would start coming in late. He would start doing this and make me look bad. And that is something that happens amongst our people a lot, because I've done that. I put my reputation on the line to endorse someone who actually dropped the ball, let me down. And I mean, so we got a lot of work to do, man.
Right, but to answer to that point, and I'm glad that you admitted it yourself, because I view you as a very heavy brother. But
yeah.
rather than look at it as that's just one brother, don't let it deter you from going after another brother. Because I want to give you an example of something that I did myself, and real quick, and I just want to tell you, this brother wouldn't have got an opportunity. So this brother walked in applying for a job. He wasn't dressed like he normally does, and because I'm an activist, I walked him outside. I said, is this how you're looking for a job? Well, I didn't know I was going to run into you. First thing he said, I said, well, I'm going to ask you something, and I'm going to see if you're going to finish it. You only get, I know I only get one time to make an impression. So this is the impression you want me to see. And what I told him is, if this was a white man, you know, he just said, we're not hiring, he'd have balled up your application. But because I want to give you an opportunity, I want you to come back Thursday and dress like you're looking for a job. Now, the reason why I'm going through this story is the kids that were at the restaurant, Hispanic, Asian, and white, that worked for me, they came to my office, they knocked on the door. Leonard, that guy that came on Tuesday, he's back, but he's in a suit now. Now, the story that I want to tell you about this brother that's amazing once we're given an opportunity. During Christmas time, most restaurants sell gift certificates. So all the time, you know, during Christmas time, all the restaurants selling gift certificates, selling gift certificates. The average employee throughout the company that I work for sells 2,500. So I want you to understand, the average employee that works in the company averages 2,500. This brother sold one Christmas, and I want you to listen to me, $40,000 in gift certificates. Wow. So if I would have not helped this brother, the company would have been left $40,000. Now, his trick was he was black, and guess what he did? He went to all the black churches in the community, and he sold $40,000. I say this to say, if I looked at him a certain way, I could have labeled him a certain way, but I felt it was my job to educate him, and he was the number one producer for that year, and that's all I wanted to say.
That's excellent. Yeah, I've had hit or miss situations where people pleasantly surprised me and things like that. I just was giving my honest feedback, like, you know,
right.
Those type of thoughts go through our minds because, you know, we're
that's
trying
right.
to stay and figure out. So, all right, thank you, brother. I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, peace.
Thank you. Okay. Now we got Brother Leon. Hello? Hello? Brother Leon? Maybe he has his phone. All right, we'll come back to him. Sister Shauna. Hello, Sister Shauna.
Hey, Brother Lou.
Peace, sister.
Hello, everyone. So I think, you know, so far every caller's kind of said the same thing, and it kind of adds up to the same thing I'm thinking, and it boils down to trust. We don't trust each other. I think it's a whole bunch of reasons why, but I think the bottom line is trust. So I think it's stuff like this that builds trust, and I like what the caller right before me that talked about, I think maybe one before, that talked about going into the community, you know, doing things together. You know, why don't we do things together anymore? It's not so much just cultural. It's our change in lifestyle. We don't live in the communities anymore. We don't know each other's grandmothers anymore. We have so many stories about how, you know, if you did something on block one, by the time you made it home, you got two whoopings, right? One where you were and one by your parents for the disrespect. Right, it's not just cultural. It's also the changing of the time, how we've moved out of the community. We rely on each other less and less because we've spent the last 50 years running away from who we are, and right now we're trying to run back to what we was. Right, so I was just looking at TV the other day, and kind of it reminded me of a conversation that we had on a previous call. When you ask the question, do we need more doctors, lawyers, scientists, you know, or do we need more entertainers? Do we need more this and that? And I felt perplexed by that question because I'm thinking that we do have a talent. We do have a natural talent for entertainment. We do have a natural talent for athleticism. And, you know, to be strong and to be good at athletics. Why do we run or feel ashamed from those of that thing? You know, why are we ashamed of that? I just think we can add to it. I think we can be number one in athletics, but we can also be number one in money management. We also can be number one in building the community. We also can celebrate so many other things. So it's like we, you know, after Jim Crow, we spent 50 years running away from being who we are naturally, you know, an African-American. And I know people struggle with that term, but that term, it really describes where we came from and to into where we are right now. We are not what we were in 16 whatever when we got here. We're not who we are in 1920. We're not who we are in 1960. Who we are in 2018 is what we are right now. And so why are we running from that? And so I think that that's what it is. It's just we don't trust each other. We don't, you know, it's a whole bunch of stuff that goes with why we don't trust each other. And, you know, not just slavery, not just all the excuses that are out there. It's not just that. It's so many other things. And I just think it's those of us that are like you and I, Brother Lou, the other callers that are on the line and the other sisters and brothers that are out there, it's people like us that have to give the opportunity, that have to be patient, but not accept the BS either. You know me, I'm a realist with all things. I tell you the truth in things. But I tell you the truth in love. You know, it's like we forgot that. We forgot about how to tell each other the truth and still say, but look, brother, let me help you. But look, sister, I'm going to still help you. But I just want to let you know you're out of line right now. Hey, your children was out of line. You can get mad at me and want to fight all you want. But this was out of line. And, you know, I'm here for you. Let me check on your kids. So whatever. We've gotten away from what made us connected long time ago, running away from who we are. And this is the end of what I have to say. I'm going to bring up what I think I said to you before. My grandmother told me it's okay to give your children what you didn't have, but don't forget to give them what you did have. And I think that's the number one thing that affects every facet of why we can't work together. We forgot to continue the thing that made us strong and who we are.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you about us, the trust factor, and, you know, right, because that it kind of sums it up, right? So we don't trust each other enough to just, like, you know, go with the flow. You know, but I also think a lot of that has to do with what I mentioned to the brother, when it's like, you know what, I did that before, I trusted someone before, I did this before, and it turned out bad. And so then that, you know, that makes us, you know, have a bad taste in our mouth of going forward. So that's why, like, with this organization, that's why we try to keep, like, the membership dues, that's why they're so small, so negligible. That's why we have the, just if you don't like it, just cancel it and get your money back, right? So that way you don't even have to worry about any of that. Saying, you know how I am in terms of the reputation of this organization, and you know how things are handled, and you know the impressions that come across and stuff like that. The things that we will get involved with, the things that we won't get involved with, right? And it's because I'm acutely aware of how sensitive a lot of our brothers and sisters are about, like, almost anything, and that is, you know, due to the trust issue. As regards to the athletes and entertainers thing, right? So here's something really, really interesting. Brother Cujo and I briefly spoke about this last weekend. But no, not last, maybe about 2 weeks ago. So we know that they have studied us. Like, they know us better than we know ourselves, right? And so you're saying to yourself, all right, if, you know, so you got the system, you know, it's white supremacy, whatever it is, it's keeping us oppressed, you know, cut us off from certain opportunities over here, but then make opportunities available over there. Why is that? And so a theory that's been proposed, or that we, you know, uncovered, is that they show you, you know, so you have to be exceptional to be an entertainer or an athlete, right? It requires a whole lot of time, attention, and dedication to be, you know, to achieve that. But and what happens is, you know, everyone wants to be a celebrity. So if our children see that the way for you to become rich and famous or whatever it is to go into becoming an athlete or entertainer, you put all your time and your energy into that, but you don't focus on something that actually is productive or helps your community, right? So we have all of our kids focusing on playing sports, focusing on, you know, becoming rappers and doing all this other stuff, spending all that time, energy, and money instead of, and you know, and then the window of opportunity is so small. Very few are actually going to get through that little door, right? You got a mass of people that go in there and they're forgetting to take up any other kind of productive opportunity. So now when they don't make it through the door, they turn around, they have no way to really support themselves. They have no way to contribute to society. And some, you know, I believe it's Dr. Amos Wilson or something like that, or someone like that. They said that's by design. That's to keep us without paying attention to becoming a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer, or whatever it is. That is the culture. That is our culture. And actually, when you're bookish, when you're smart, when you're into academia, you're actually shunned in our community. And Asian cultures and Jewish cultures, that, you know, intelligence and that kind of stuff is praised. In our community, is you're being shunned. You're called a nerd. You're, you know, whatever, whatever. So, you know, so when you say, you know, we should embrace it, I mean, yeah, okay, cool. It's one of our geniuses, but I, you know, I really think that we need to understand it for what it is. It's a system that's designed to catch the attention of young boys and girls everywhere, and they have to be so focused and so dedicated to trying to do that, but they can't actually, all of them can't get through that door. But any person who puts in the time in school and applies themselves, they have a much better shot at becoming a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, a judge, or an engineer, electrician, a plumber, whatever it is, anything that would allow them to become productive in our society, and especially be able to, like our brother Lennon say, pull another one in, you know, to that career path or whatever it is. And that's just, you know, that's just something that we uncovered within the last 2 weeks since we actually posed that question.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with you saying, I just don't think that, like, that's the underlying problem to why we can't work together. So the question
Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. Right. It's not.
Oh, okay. Well, that,
no, I was saying, I was just saying it to address that. You basically to share some new information I had, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I definitely agree. Thank you so much.
All right, no problem. Okay, so we got Brother Vaughn, and then we got Brother Cujo. Brother Vaughn.
What's going on, Brother Lou? How everybody doing?
All right.
And this is my observation, like, and one thing that I've learned with us as a people, we start with an I can't attitude. And then coming from that, like, we have a problem listening. Like, we listen to respond, not listen to take in what's being said too. So it's more or less a confrontation than it is a discussion. And when it comes becomes a confrontation, you know, not everybody's attitude in. So, like you said, you can talk to a person about Black Lives Matter and what you're trying to achieve with us as a people all together and all that, and they'll lead an organization because they don't agree with you. And you telling them, like, this is your organization as much as it is my idea of footwork and everything, but, you know, I'm not putting myself nowhere that I'm not putting you. Like, I'm on ground floor with y'all and everything, but somebody will leave the organization because of a disagreement that you two had. Obviously, they couldn't have been listening to what's trying to be, like, you know, what we're trying to accomplish here. Another thing, money is horrible to us because I grew up with people, and I know people that grew up together, and what one thing that I've noticed is these people can be, like, if we in the gutter and we in the hood, we cool. And as long as we all in that area, we all cool. as soon as somebody gets some money, or as soon as the whole squad gets some money, or everybody do something to make the money, they fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's hard to try to do something with somebody because you know the money gonna tear y'all apart. And it's, why does it? I don't know. I can't even understand the concept of why it would even make somebody think differently about this person that they grew up with and built this whole organization with, and now you think differently about them because y'all got some money.
We have some brainwashing. Yeah, we have some really bad brainwashing done to us. Like the brother Leonard said. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it, like you said, from slavery. You know, so I know you've heard us say this again, but I'm gonna just say it again.
Yeah.
A lot of the trauma and a lot of experiences and a lot of the negative behaviors that we learned during slavery, that stuff is passed on genetically, bro. It's scientifically proven. You know, the fears, the apprehension, all that stuff. That stuff is passed on genetically, because a lot of us are still acting in ways that just don't make sense, right? Because it just doesn't apply to our current situation. And so, yeah, and that's why we want to focus on the children. That's why we want to focus on the babies. We want to go in there and just have, you know, a psychologist, whoever it is, someone who's really deep into the culture, someone who really understands what our true, you know, at least some semblance of what our true nature, our true culture is. Go in there, man, and let's just give that type of education to the children, because, see, children are a blank slate. And the reason why the vast majority of us act the way we act is because of our experiences, right? So our parents may have told, oh, you got to watch out for people when you get money. And then as you live your life and you go through experience, somebody, you know, one of your brothers, your sisters, whoever it is, sister, cousin, aunt, uncle, somebody steals some money from you, or someone does something funny, someone starts acting funny about money, and you're like, I remember my mother say that. And now that reinforces something that's just been passed along.
That's what it is. In your life, that's what it is. You live by that now.
Yep. And so that's why we need these community resource centers. We need these environments for these children to get around where they're having positive experiences with black faces. That's essentially what it has to be. They need to be around their brothers and sisters and feel loved, feel protected, feel that trust. You understand what I'm saying? Once they have that type of experience, if we're able to roll that out across the country and we have a bunch of black children growing up with that same type of experience, when they get out into the world and they start meeting each other and they start, that becomes the new culture. That becomes the new expected behavior. You understand what I'm saying? Another thing about us, right, if we go into an environment, so we're really good with adapting. So let's say if we have two or three children who are raised with that communal trust, that bond or whatever it is, because of our inherent nature to love, to for harmony and things like that, even a child that didn't grow up in that environment, he would immediately recognize what's going on and take. And we would be able to absorb that new cultural identity, that new cultural perspective. Cultural characteristics. So, I mean, I have hope for us, man. It's just that I have hope for the babies. You know what I'm saying? Like, our problems are too many. It's, you know, we've all experienced way too many disappointments with our own people and got too many hangups. But the babies, they haven't experienced anything, and so they would be primed for redefinition of what it means to be black. I said that last week. I said that we're going to have to stand out and become a new definition, or a segment within the group. Right, exactly. That's what we're going to have to do. And then all of us who, you know, I don't like using the word woke because, you know, I don't know, they don't water that word down. But for those of us with our eyes wide open who really understand what needs to be done, maybe we need to start identifying ourselves as something different so that those on the outside, they'll understand we not with the nonsense. So,
and it's like, I think, and I like the fact that you, like, don't allow us to bring religion into the situation, because that'll change your opinion about a person just because it's this or it's that. So if you leave that out of it, that gives you, like, be a pure person. Just be a person and show that as a person we can get through things without that, because there's a difference in opinion. And like you said, we'll go through that opinion and we'll argue over opinions all every time we make a phone call, and we'll never get nothing accomplished. And yeah, I remember my first phone call, the first thing I said was, we got brainwashed for hundreds of years, and that was detrimental to our people. Like, and the way they did it, they was real, real smart about it. So we got to be 10 times smarter than they was to get us where we are today in order to get us out of this. So it's like, it's going to be a struggle, you know, but it's like the accomplishment. Like, we got to accomplish something. It's just what you said. We got to redefine ourselves. We got to be seen as something different. We got to be seen as a different type or whatever it is, or, you know, and like you said, with the community resources, like, that's the whole thing about it right there. Our people need to see our people doing something positive, see our people in a positive light all the time. Every now and then, or on a certain show or on a certain song or something like that. No, all the time. Every time you go to this neighborhood, this is what it is. Every time you see these type of people, this is what it is. Every time, regardless of where you at in the country, you could be anywhere in the U.S., and you're going to see Black Wallace Matter there. We're going to be a part of that, and we're going to show y'all how we are. This is who we are. That everything else is a watered down version of who we really are.
So we were originals, and everybody else is a fake. Everybody's a copy.
I mean, I'm saying, like, if you don't know, like, you got to get a bite of it, and we got to be able to do something that stands out. Like, so, like, everybody wants the Kool-Aid that's flavored. Like, you don't want no watered down Kool-Aid. So we want to show them that we got flavor here. This is flavor. This is where the flavor at. Period. Everything that you heard before, don't even listen to it. Start over new. Start over new. It's like a start over new. That's how I see it. We got to start over new.
All right, cool. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you chiming in, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Brother Cool Joe, what's going on, brother?
Hey, how's it going, brother?
All right. Hey, was that Amos Wilson? Was that, did I get that right or no?
Yeah, that was.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I want to say, to me, this is kind of like the elephant in the room. I look at things from a real basic perspective. And I appreciate hearing what everybody had to say, all the brothers and sisters. And personally, what I've seen, when it boils down to it, It's some really basic issues that tend to stop us from being able to work together as a community. And when people getting together to try to do something amazing, it's like I heard somebody mention where people always say you can present an amazing idea. And then somebody's going to say, what about this or what about that? And the combativeness that tends to exist when we're trying to work together collectively, and specifically pointing at the stuff that stops the movement from happening. Like, over the months, I've even heard on different forums and people calling in for the town hall meetings. I hear where people have their differences, and sometimes it's a sharp difference, and people will just drop out. And people drop out of movements, and there's always something to be said about it. And a lot of times these reasons are not justifiable. I think Outside of just organizations that have tried to accomplish a similar goal as this one, there is a compilation of a few small things that tend to stop people from being able to work together. In my observance, I would say one is low self-esteem. And that accounts for a lot of the combativeness, because a person is trying to prove that they know something, or they want to get they want to get their shine, or you know, some people you can't get a word in edgewise with because they're busy trying to show that they know something. It's like I was listening to one of the previous calls before, and I heard the brother talking about one of the brothers was talking about organizations that he'd been part of or was interested in. He just hears somebody talking about how much they know and all of this, the bragging, the showing, and it really don't amount to nothing. The stuff like that comes about because the person got low self-esteem. And I think it's only realistic to deal with these type of issues and address some of the real issues that exist within our people. And, yeah, a lot of this stuff is inherent back from days of slavery. And it's that complex of fear, that stuff be passed down. But these are things that we can address. The low self-esteem is one. Ignorance is another one. I've heard people make an argument that's not clear. They might have an idea about something, but then when they're asked pointed questions, they can't answer them. So they try to shift the conversation to something else. Again, well, one of those, well, what about this, though?
Mm-hmm.
That's him. Talk about what that's called, yeah. And low self-esteem.
Yeah.
And then that's also the third component that I've seen as a real problem is the lack of willingness to learn or adapt. Too many times our people don't want to say, I don't know, and open themselves up to actually learn something. A lot of times we get too focused, our people get too focused on like a belief system, like belief is the primary thing. If you believe it, then it's real. No, if it's real, it's real. But sometimes our people get to avoiding dealing with these realities. That in some sorts we have low self-esteem. We have ignorance. Everybody has ignorance to a degree. Nobody knows everything. You can learn from other people. But how can you do that if you got this defense mechanism in place? And you're always trying to prove yourself. You're not open. These are like some basic characteristics in existence and in psychology. Like when you're in that aggressive mode, you're not open to learn. So when our people have this combativeness when they're trying to work together, and it could be a simple resolution. You're not even in the mind space to be receiving and actually learn something new or learn to look at something from a different perspective, to understand what somebody else is saying, to develop a new vision and grow. Now, these are some things that all of us have at certain points. But if we're not honest with ourselves and able to identify where that exists in us, then we're cutting off opportunity for ourselves, and we're not going to have that collective thought process where we're working together and moving together just off of some of these basic principles, dealing with our self-esteem, dealing with our knowledge base, and being open to learn and adapt. Kind of goes back to that like Darwin's theory, only the strongest survive, and that whole thing.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Mhm.
And I mean, it's not hard to see some truth in that, because I mean, it's a difference between surviving and thriving.
Yep.
Obviously, we as a culture are not thriving. But we can, though. If we can overcome some of these basic things within ourselves and keep our mind open to grow. I mean, like me and you, brother, we talk all the time. I don't necessarily agree with you all the time. But I stay open to learn things. I know you know some things that I don't know. I know some things that you don't know. Only way we can benefit from each other and everybody and any and everybody that we talk to is that if we have this certain state of mind where we're comfortable in our own skin.
Yep.
Being comfortable and confident in what we do know, what we have, and who we are. Willing to expand our knowledge base and work together collectively. I mean, it's a real simple formula, but we'll never get to that if we're not honest with ourselves. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say on that subject.
Okay, cool. Thank you. All right, so that's the problem. So we're not being honest. So we're not being honest about where we're starting off from, the point that we're starting off from. Is that what you're saying?
In a nutshell.
Do you think that's because it's too painful? Because I know when I try to sit down and try to have real talk, like you're one of the few people I can have real talk with. When I try to have real talk, bro, you know what happens. We lose members.
But you know what? I would say from a realistic perspective, it's just like I've seen people do this too. I've seen people who grown up and had a rough childhood or whatever, okay?
Uh-huh.
And all the way until they was like, let's say, 18 or 20 years old. Now, it's understandable that having a really rough childhood may have presented some challenges. And you might have had a rough start going to your adult life. But, I mean, we can't look at it 20 years later and have the same complaint. Oh, I had a rough childhood. We can't say the reason why I'm 40, 50 years old and I don't have nothing is because I had a rough childhood. Not being an able-bodied person, no, that's unrealistic.
Right.
Me personally, I understand the tribulation that our culture has been through, and yes, it imposed some challenges. But one thing that we can't afford to do is use that as an excuse to not grow.
Mm-hmm.
We have to develop the mind state of an overcomer. Be honest with ourselves about where we at and where we want to go. And there are steps that it's going to take to get there. So do we complain about it and say, hey, I had a horrible childhood. I can't take that step.
Right. All right, brother. Thank you so much for sharing.
I tried to get me to say I was disabled. I refused.
Who tried to do that? Oh, you saying? Oh, okay, I get it. All right. All right. Yeah, but you know, I was gonna tell you, bro. You harder than most, man. You harder than most, bro. And so you know that's something special. A lot of folks don't have that, man. A lot of folks, they don't have that fortitude. So one of the biggest arguments that I have, it's not even an argument. One of the points of dissension that usually happens when someone says, okay, you know what, forget this organization, is when I say, listen, we don't have to have accountability and responsibility. That is the biggest point that turns folks off, because people love that they did this to us, they did this to us. All right, so what? They did it to us, but we're the ones that's living it. Are we going to continue to live it? Are we going to continue? I mean, really, the victimhood. Yo, the biggest thing that pisses me off is this victimhood. I am not a victim. I do not accept, I do not identify with that. And when as soon as you try to take that away from our folks, they kick and scream and they fight you and forget you then and this and that. You don't understand. It's kind of sort of like the brother said, I think it was Brother Ronald came on and said it. It's like start off with that I can't mentality. If they've already accepted and have embraced the victimhood mentality. And that's the biggest thing that we need to do. And I'm telling you, man, as soon as we get these 2,000 founding members, we need to just start putting up billboards in the black community like, you are not a victim. Like, you can no longer be a victim.
Because they don't know who they are. People do have potential. I've seen people grow. Man, bro, I've personally helped somebody who went from a position of not hadn't worked in 10 years to this dude got 5 trucks making good money now. It only took him a couple of years to do it. I've helped people get out of situations like that.
Yeah, but he's not embracing the victim mentality. He's saying, I got to get up and go. I'm talking about those who won't get up and go because they're accepting victimhood. They're accepting victimhood as their lot in life. So they're just basically living life and waiting to die is essentially how I look at it. I'm talking about people who are.
I understand what you're saying. I just think that it can change for any one of us. That mentality can change.
Oh, it can. I agree. I believe it can. We're going to have to just wake folks up. That's all. Yeah, we're going to have to just, like I said, the billboards. But I'd rather wait till we get to 2,000 founding members so that way we're already building the system. So that way the system is already in play, and then we don't care whether they get mad, kick, and scream. Because right now we got to kind of be nice until we get 2,000 members. Once we get 2,000 members, boy, ooh, Lord, I clutch. You gonna see me? I mean, like, for real. Because we don't have to play nice anymore. Because that's what everybody got to do. Everybody's like, oh, we gotta tiptoe around this. We got to tiptoe around this. No, you need to know what's really, really going on. You need to really, really need to know this is what's going on, and it needs to be in your face. But we got a few more people in the queue, bro. So you got anything else you want to add in summary, bro?
No, we pretty much summarized.
Okay. All right. Brother Lawrence, peace, brother.
Yeah, good evening, Brother Lou, Brother Lawrence. How's everybody doing?
All right.
I'd just like to say that I agree basically with everyone on the call tonight. Think we're hitting the nail dead on the head, but I'd like to discuss a couple things that may add more to the solution and not just talk about, you know, the problems, because we all know what the problems are. For me, it's all about the give back. And I think that what we need to do is to come up with more creative solutions to marry up the black consumer with the black business person. Now, when you're on a flight, they always tell you in case of an emergency, put your mask on yourself first before you can, put it on the next person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and to me that means that if you are a business person, operate like a business. And because in my mind, there are lots of people in business who are not business people. And I can say that because I'm a businessman myself. I'll give you a case in point, and some of the sisters here can agree with what I'm saying. Let's talk about the hair salon. You know, you got an appointment with Cheryl. Your appointment's at 9 o'clock. Cheryl shows up at 10 o'clock. Then she's got to fidget around for another 20 minutes. And then while all you're there, you've got to listen to vulgarities and gossip and everything else. And if Cheryl wasn't a good hairdresser, you know, she probably wouldn't have the business that she's in. So, you know, it's little things like that. So that's putting our own mask on first. The other thing is about the give back. And it can be something as simple as in my community, a lot of the barber shops, they give free haircuts to the young kids, like, you know, before they go back to school. Now, I also grew up in a time with S&H green stamps. You know, you trade it with an organization, and you get these stamps, and then after you build up so much stamps, then you get stuff. And I said that to say this. If I owned a grocery store, for example, and you traded with me exclusively for 18 years, after 18 years, there's a scholarship for your newborn child to go to college. Because everybody wants to know what's in it for me. And I think it starts, like I'm Sister Shauna said, more community outreach, doing something in the community. People want to know what's in it for them. And so first of all, we got to put the mask on ourselves first. And then on top of that, we have to be about the give back, and not that you're grabbing money grabbing person, and I'm not giving back. And one of the greatest figures in the Bible to me is King Solomon, and everybody knows that King Solomon was wealthy and everything else, but he didn't ask for wealth. He asked for wisdom to rule justly over his people. But if you're doing things for the right reason, you don't worry about the money, because the money will come. But if you have a heart of Solomon and, you know, you're doing the right things, then everything else will fall in place. And so basically, to me, that will solve a majority of ills that we have in the black community. But it all starts with some kind of community outreach and giving back, and not just talking about it, but doing it.
Well, I mean, that you just basically summarized what the whole organization is about. So I agree with you 100% wholeheartedly. You know, I just want to add that it has to be structured giving back, right? So you can't just give back without any system, structure, without a plan for what it is, you know, for what it is that you expect to build or develop. And essentially, you know, you hear me use this word system a lot, because that's essentially what we need, and that's what we're trying to build, right? So we're trying to build a structured way of giving back to these communities in a way where it's helping the communities, but also in a way where it's self-sustaining, because that's one of the other things that a lot of people, you know, from a lot of the plans and a lot of things that I see people talk about when they say, you know, how they're going to go about rebuilding a community, they're, you know, they really don't take a good look at the numbers. They really don't take a look at what it takes to keep something like this going, right? So we don't want to implement a community resource center and the need to beg every year for funding, right? And then the thing shuts down. We want it to have a built-in source of funding, or, you know, we want the model to be a system where it's being able to be, where it's able to sustain itself. So, I like I said, I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. That's exactly what we're about, brother. All right.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Brother Jeff, and then Brother Leon, I see you back in the queue. Yes, Brother Jeff.
Brother Lou, much love. How you doing?
See, what's going on, brother?
Nothing much. I'd like to say peace to everybody, the brothers and sisters this evening. Everything is going beautiful. I'd like to address it this way, I guess. I think what has to be said, I mean, what I'm going to say is this. We have to recondition ourselves. And what I mean by recondition ourselves, we need therapy. And when we address that, we're going to have to address it in a way that we have to understand that we accept it and we expect it, that this recondition and this therapy has to go on. And it's just like when you, like you said, when you're having conversations with people and they're bringing ideas to the floor and people are attacking it in the wrong way, we have to referee that negative and let those individuals know that, look, you have to accept and you have to expect that you need to be reconditioned, your thought process, and you need, you know, you understand the therapy that we're going through. And we have to just stop, you know, crossing, and we have to stop crossing each other and pulling the individual down instead of pushing the individual up. It's all about the respect and respect of people's views and ideas. And like I say, it's just basically, like I say, the recondition, and we have to referee it. It's just going to have to be refereed, and like I say, it has to be accepted and it has to be expected. And that's what I see as, you know, happening. Like when Doctor was on with the book and everything, it was the same thing we was going through when he was asking us, you know, the questions and what we felt of this, that, and the other. It's a reconditioning, it's a therapy, and it's something that we're going to have to accept and expect for us to move forward. If you don't want the therapy and the recondition, you're going to be the same way. We got to create a new, the new. That's basically what we got to do, create the new. And that's got to be us. Like they say, in every state, every city, that's got to be us, the new. But you got to recondition it. You got to therapy it. And it's got to be that. But if you don't do that, it's just going to be the same old, same old.
Well, I think we, you know, those of us who are behind something like this or behind an organization or any organization, I think we are the most receptive to opening up, being reconditioned, to accepting new things. I mean, I know me personally, my personality, of what I am, I know that I have had to grow a lot. I've had to learn to change my outlook on a lot of different things just by being involved with this organization. I've grown. Right. I was receptive to the change. I made myself, like you said, I wanted to be able to understand the different perspective of what's going on with brothers and sisters all across the country, because what may be going on in your community may not be going on in mine, but, you know, it's still a problem. It's something that needs to be addressed. That's how wide the tentacles of, you know, of this oppression stretches. You know, maybe in your area it's jobs, maybe in my area it's drugs, you know, or something like that.
Right.
Somebody else's area it's violence or whatever. So those are the types of, those are the, you know, so you're 100% right. We have to be ready. We have to be the new. But, you know, like I said, the members of this organization, the people who become members, those are mostly people who just want to be bigger, who want to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves. And, I mean, us as a people, we love that communal feel. What everyone on this call who's not yet a member, and if you're thinking about it or you're trying to really get an idea of this, it's really like that, a communal feel where you can come, and if you're thinking about talking about progress, if you're thinking about networking with brothers and sisters who are trustworthy and you want to be trustworthy too, those are the kinds of characteristics that we've discovered amongst our members. Like, because we've been doing these exercises amongst ourselves for the past couple of weeks. We got another one coming up next week. And we've really been finding out who we are as a collective, as an organization, as a group of brothers and sisters who are stretched all across the country and are coming together to try to do something. And so, one of the main characteristics, people, they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They're selfless, right? So we want to help even brothers and sisters that we don't know, because we're just so sick and tired of our people being treated a certain way or looking bad. We want to leave a legacy, right? Like I said, the trustworthiness. Another thing, there's a lot of people, I can't tell you how many people who have come along, watched the blueprint, said, oh, my God, this is like something that we've been looking for, right? So it's realistic solutions. The solutions that we're proposing, they're not like fantasy. They're rooted in numbers. They're rooted in math. Maybe a little bit too much to a fault. But we have all the numbers, statistics breaking down, and we can show how we can have incremental growth and how we can reach the little milestones of our plan. And then one of the biggest things, those who are willing to set aside personal differences, whether that's religious, political, sexual preference, whatever it is. All we care about is that you understand that we have a problem in our community and you're tired of seeing it. If you say that and I say that, I'm willing to work with you. I don't care who you pray to. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care who you lay down with. Can we agree that something needs to be done for all of us that are like this skin tone or whatever it is? Because the oppressor is not making the distinction. You can believe that. They are not making the distinction. So you can classify yourself however you want, but when they come and they see you and they classify you as black, African-American, or whatever it is, you can best believe the oppression, the injustice, and all that other stuff is coming right down the pipe, the disrespect. Because, I know you guys seen it a few months ago where the cops went, like, especially when the cops were going really, really haywire, when Trump was about to come in and all that other stuff was going on, they pulled over the DA in Florida. Like, you pulled over your boss. What are you doing? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, and she was a black woman. So those are the types of things that, we have to keep in mind. We're looking for anyone who has any of the qualities that I just mentioned, by all means, definitely jump on board, man, and come and see what we're about, man, and help us build this thing. Because we can't really do it. I mean, we're trying. You can believe that, right? So we're trying to build it with what we got. But, help is welcome. Let's just put it that way. All right, brother. You got anything you want to add in summary?
That's it. That's it.
Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. Brother Leon, I see you made it back in the queue, brother.
Okay, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you now. Great.
Okay, yeah, I got technology took me out. But I'm just thankful for being on the call, and I was listening to everything and just great points. But I was going back to the question, like, why we can't work together. And I was just looking at what was brought out, education versus slavery, taking time with each other, the trust factor, lack of trust. And we talked about attitude, hearing, and being able to hear and being able to listen. All these are valid points. And they even talked about, low self-esteem and lack of willingness to learn. These are all good points. But the question is, say, why we can't work together? Okay, now what I'm looking at is that I'm thinking, and this is how I see it. We can't work together because right now a lot of us are living in a false pretense. We think that we are free in this country. Now, if you kind of follow me with this, when I say free, okay, I need to first again say, I can go do this because I can go do this here. Well, no, we had to march and do a lot of things. We have that right. Well, by thinking that you have something that you don't have, you have your way. You have a false feeling of security. And that kind of has you in a position where you're going to continue to do what the press has put on us, what through not working together. So as we get better at let our young people know that this is a fact, that, we are not free, okay? We have liberties, but we're not free. So in becoming free, that's what I'm looking at as being something. Now, and that's kind of piggybacked off Mr. Tubman. She said, she could have freed more people if they knew they weren't slaves, okay? So that's the issue to say why we can't work together is that our young people and some of us think that we are free. Well, we're not, okay? We live in a capitalist society, okay? Well, what frees you in a capitalist society is being able to produce something in that society. Other than that, we're not free. So what this program here is giving us opportunity to bring people to that point, but I'm thinking that as we get better of letting our people know that fact that we are not free and then explaining what freedom really means, that would kind of bring us to a point. And all these points were brought out, these are things that could bring us to that point where we recognize, I'm not free, but working together could get me free. But first, I think we have to kind of come to the point, and we can't get everybody, but we get enough people just to recognize that, and just in one community. And then you can see, once that is done, when people see that, then they go, you know what, I'm not really free. This is, I'm in a capitalist society. I got to do this, this, and this for my freedom. Other than that, I'm going to always be, you know, under that burden of not being free. So those are my thoughts on it, brother.
Okay, well, yeah, thank you for chiming in. I mentioned that thing with Harriet Tubman, you know, a few weeks back, and I'm gonna mention it again because this is some food for thought, right? So Harriet Tubman, as we all know, she was a slave, went to freedom, and kept risking life and limb, running back and forth, trying to free more slaves, and then you know she. So I think she was commemorated at some kind of award or inauguration, some abolitionist thing or whatever. And it was reported that she freed 300 to 400 slaves, right? And then that's when she said she could have freed more if only they would have known that they were slaves. That, I want you guys to think about that for a second, right? So here is a woman who is running back into the lion's den, right? Trying to wake up people who are actually experiencing the whole situation, the whole reason why the rest of us are pissed off, right? So because most of us, the things that we're pissed off about, it all stems from slavery. That's what we're all pissed off about. And this sister went back and was actually trying to get those people who were actually living under those conditions, and she was only able to get 300 or 400. They weren't even able to recognize that they were in bondage. That's striking to me. And that's what made me realize, you know what, it's going to be hard to sound the alarm and wake up everyone. So we had this whole discussion here. To me, I mean, it was an exercise. It was a productive discussion. But, you know, if you guys, you know, ever hear me talking or whatever, I really don't think the solution is trying to go and wake up every single person, trying to get them right. Like I said, so we're only looking for 2,000 founding members. We're looking for 2,000 people. But I realistically don't think that that's the solution. And the reason why is because if this lady who is going back, talking to the actual slaves, talking to the actual people who are living under those conditions and can't get them to wake up and run for it or whatever it is, after she's showing them, hey, listen, I have the Underground Railroad. This thing can work. What hopes do we have waking people up? If, you know, like how Brother Leon said, they don't even realize they're in bondage. They don't realize they're in some kind of mental slavery or you know, financial slavery or whatever, right? What I looked at is how they operate their system, how they enslave people, right? And just for those who don't know, they're enslaving their own people as well. So just know that. But I look at how they set these systems up. And what they do is it's kind of like boiling a frog, right? So you put the frog in the pot when the water is warm, and then you warm it up gradually. That's kind of sort of what, well, us, they did a straight culture shock. But then after emancipation, then they went back and started doing, you know, the boiling the frog techniques or whatever. That's kind of sort of what we're going to have to do with our folks, right? So instead of turning up the temperature, turning up the heat, right, maybe we're going to have to slowly turn the fire down on them so that they're no longer under that kind of pressure, no longer under that kind of heat. Because if we do it all at once, I think it's a culture shock. The vast majority of us have had the mindsets that we've had, and it's been passed on, and our parents and grandparents or whoever else probably have had the same understanding, outlook, or whatever it is that we currently share, and we're probably even passing it on to our children and don't realize it, right? So we want to be able to make a few changes, nothing so drastic. Because if it's too drastic, we're going to push them away. They're going to reject it. It's too radical of an idea. It's too much too soon. And, you know, and that's why, like, look, so we're talking about these children. I am not saying that I am a culturalist or a psychologist or anything. I want to hire the kinds of people who know how to do this stuff, right? So this organization, what we're saying, right, we're not talking about us actually going in there and doing it. If we have somebody who knows how to create one of these curriculums or one of these, you know, cultural camp, a cultural curriculum or whatever to re-educate our children or whatever it is, that's fine. But once we build it, we want it to be based in psychology as well, right? And we want it to, because they have ways that where behavior, where it creates a really, really strong bond, especially with, like, modern psychology. And you can see this with, like, Facebook. Vast majority of people are addicted to social media. This is something new. This social media is something new, and within a short period of time, they have retrained children, adults, and everybody. People just straight up addicted to social media, and they have abandoned certain other, you know, have abandoned other cultural norms. But, you know, if you if all of us go out and look around, people with their heads down in their phone, that has become a cultural norm. And that's and we got to think about, right? So if anybody, you know, does any, you know, check into that, they provide these dopamine feedback loops, these viral like when you post something or somebody likes it or whatever. Brother Leon, I'm gonna mute your phone for a minute because you got a you got a loud noise in the back.
Yes, sir.
So they provide that dopamine feedback loop. So every time you leave a post or a comment, and if someone responds and you see that little icon on your phone, that's meant to train you. And you can see a guy who the guy who used to work at Facebook, he actually created that, and he, you know, he left the company. And he's going on now, like, on this major tour, telling everybody what they've done, how they've trained. They brought in behaviorists to do this. They actually got people out there that can do it. I think we need to do that. We need to have some behaviorists come in and tell us how to reverse our behavior. Some of the things that are unproductive, some of the things that don't help us as a people, we need to find opposite behaviors that are to our benefit. And make them addictive if they need to be. I don't care. It's like, you know, when you stop smoking, you start chewing on celery sticks. Well, you know, you're going to be walking around looking crazy chewing on celery, but you no longer smoke cigarettes or chewing a carrot or whatever it is. So, I mean, it's possible. It's definitely possible, and it's something that we need to explore. I think that the solution, although there were some pretty good suggestions here, I think that the actual solution is going to have to be a bit more subtle, and it's going to have to be applied to the children, because they like I keep saying, you know, they're a blank slate. They're the most impressionable, and we have a lot of influence with them. So hold on, Brother Leon, is there anything you want to add in summary, brother? Hello? Okay, so he's back muted.
Hey, I'm back. I'm back, Brother Lou. I'm back. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah.
I muted now. Yeah, one thing I did want to add, and this is something I was looking at and is agreeing with what you're saying, is when you're dealing, when you select who we're going to really help, okay, well, what I'm looking at is that, okay, you have to tie all that in together, and a lot of times it's a certain word or phrases or that makes that happen for the masses. Okay, now, this is just a suggestion. Right now in the world today, everything is dealing with a disruptive. You have apps that's disrupting the way people buy, like Uber, you know, app put taxi business out. It was a disruptive app and put them out of business, okay? Now, with our culture right now, as a race, okay, our culture need to be disrupted. Now, the definition of disruptive is what it said. This is what I've read. It says causing or tending to cause disruption. Okay, so that gives, again, the definition of disruptive. It's causing
disruption.
Yeah, you're disruptive. I'm talking bad, brother. But it's causing or tending to cause a disruption. So now what we say by having our energy going in a slogan at, like, maybe say a disruptive culture. Okay, now what's happening? So what do you mean? Okay, well, I'm glad you asked. Okay, our culture, it's not us that's the problem. It's our culture that's the problem. So now we're speaking what that into existence by saying what. We're going to disrupt our culture, the way we do things. How are we going to do that? We're going to start with the young. We're going to help the single ladies. We have the brothers that can't get a job. This is how we disrupt our culture. And with that slogan, basically, it could be used in all the attributes we talked about tonight. They can fall under that, because why? They're all contributing to disrupting our culture. It's not us that's the problem. It's our culture, the way we think about us. So now by putting that in there, that's something that everybody can kind of come under the same umbrella, you know, saying, well, you know what? My culture, that, you know, the way I think about my brother, that's my problem. Well, that's disrupted culture. So now you got an app or a movement that's what is disrupting our culture. And what you mean? Glad you asked. We're changing the way we think about people. Well, now everybody can be saying that and doing that. Why not? Whatever you had to bring to the table, you know, we talked about with education, and then we talked about trust. Okay, well, all these factors we can disrupt our culture. I just wanted to bring that in because I'm looking at that and I say, well, it's not us, it's our culture, the way we think about us, the way we treat us. So that is determined by and is governed by our, and it equals to be our culture. So I just want to throw that in, okay?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. You are 100% right. That is like design thinking. They go out and they look at how to engineer new types of, like, they go out and they look at how to engineer mass behavioral change. And so what they do is, and so if anyone knows anything about, like, Mark Zuckerberg, right, he was a computer science and psychology major, right? So he knew about little psychological quirks that people have. He just basically went out and just kept reiterating different little psychological tweaks that, you know, that correspond to things that we, you know, that's just laying right under the surface of our psyche. And then once Facebook got bigger, they have like a whole department of people where that's what they do. They just go in there and they just rapidly test all of these different types of psychological components, and then they see what's sticky and what catches on. And once that became known, once that model became known, that's the same thing Instagram and Snapchat and all these other different types of, you know, sticky, addictive types of apps. They basically pioneer that whole thing. And what's so amazing about it, which should get us all excited, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, blue, Indian, Chinese, whatever. The whole world is addicted to this stuff. So these guys have found things that resonate with people on a human level, on a psychologically human level, to get people through all kinds of cultures addicted to this stuff. So it's like the brother is saying, they're disrupting culture. They're disrupting, right? So that's a major work. Prior to launching Black Wireless Battle, as I was doing my research, as I was sitting there making notes for the blueprint, I had that kind of thinking in mind. It's like, okay, you know what? It's possible. It can be done, because here goes someone who, like, this thing didn't exist a few years ago, and right now it has the whole world going crazy. It's possible to create something sticky like that. And that's what I think, and that's what we're trying to create, right? We don't want to ask our brothers and sisters to stop doing what they're doing, to do X, Y, Z, whatever. No, we want to put things in place that corresponds with their current behavior, but then it gives them a totally different type of result. So if they're used to sending their kids outside because, you know, or letting the TV or the iPod or whatever, I mean, the iPad or whatever, raise the child, instead of doing that, send the kid outside, and now the kid goes to a community resource center. So you're a parent, and you know you're tired, you're whatever it is, and now your child goes home, and the next thing you know, your child comes home, and they know how to like wire up the, you know, they're not a wire like a freaking lamp, or know how to do some kind of crazy skills. And you're like, where did you learn that? He's like, I learned that outside. You learned that outside? Yeah, at the community center. That's changing things. So now that parent feels more comfortable sending that child there. That child feels more comfortable. I mean, that parent feels more comfortable with us teaching that child more, shaping and molding that child more, and maybe some of that will, you know, create change in that household. You understand? One of the things we want to, you know, teach these children, we, you know, teach them respect, like how we had back in the days, teach them respect for the elders. So if the child is in the house and he comes in and now he's addressing his mother, ma'am, and yes, ma'am, and, you know, whatever else, because I know kids right now, they call their mother by their first name. That's just crazy. But if you go in and we teaching these children how to have respect, that's going to just change what's going on. That's going to change the culture. So I think we pretty much came full circle here tonight, brother. I want to thank you for chiming in, and I think we're pretty much done here. It's about 5 minutes. Is there anything you want to add in summary? If not, then we can.
I'm just thankful to be on the call. I'm thankful for you stepping forward and giving us the opportunity to express ourselves, and you know, I'm just thankful for being a part.
Okay, cool. Thank you. All right, Sister Mai, hold on for a second. Yes, sister.
Good evening.
Hello.
I was on the call in the beginning for as long as I could be, and then I actually was at another meeting that ended about 20 minutes ago, so I got back on the call as soon as it was over. And I just wanted to share in line with what Black Lives Matter is about and attempting to do. This meeting was in Oakland, and Supervisor Carson has been a longtime supervisor, and he's an African American advocate for Oakland, for his community. He makes no mistakes or qualms about supporting his own and Black, and that's why I love going to Oakland as often as I can and participating in his whatever he does, basically. So this particular event, and I'm bringing it up to this group because we are focused on the children, you know, and the future generations. That's what we're about, and trying to build resource centers and all that. But he really is helping to keep, reinstill, and change the mindset of the adults that are still in Oakland, in the community, that have been around for a while and, you know, remember what it used to be like when the Panthers were here and Huey Newton and, you know, when a lot was going on in Oakland. And pre-Oakland, you know, there's a lot of baby boomers that go to these meetings, but there's also a lot of young people, and they've learned how to sort of bridge the gap and bring them together collectively by having panels all the time with a variety of people on the panels that are still in the community or from the community. And just a quick, like, example, they have this artist on the panel tonight who is, like, in her 20s, a millennial, and she went away to school, but she came back, and when she called her father to say, you know, she was coming back home, he was like, why? You know, stay out there. You're in San Diego. It's supposed to be one of the best places in the world, blah, blah, blah. She's like, no, I want to come back and give back what I've learned to my community because I love Oakland. And then there was someone older who was like, and they were asking them who were their idols were and different things. One of them was Paul Robeson, was his idol, and he told us why. And there was an ex-con who was on the panel who was saying how, you know, he was obviously wayward and going the wrong way and didn't know a lot when he thought he did when he was in the streets. When he got locked up, he read a lot. That's all he did was read to pass the time away. And he learned so much in prison that completely changed his life. And he got role models from books, right? He, you know, sought to read about a lot of our ancestors like Rosa Parks and Harriet Tubman is like one of his idols and that kind of thing. And he said people that mentored him through books. And yet he's back in Oakland and wanting to give back to the community. So they were, you know, the whole, one of them was talking about how Lauryn Hill, you know, and when there was conscious rap, there was a radio personality on the panel who talked about how he's giving back. And so each of these people in their respective jobs or professions or even, but they were all advocates, right, and for the Black community. And they were saying how they're leaving a legacy now and what they are doing to give back in the community. And it was a lot of simple things and a lot of things that we talk about on Black Lives Matter, like cleaning up your community. They gave tons of information, especially for Black History Month. We're doing this weekend on this corner. We're, you know, come out, support. We're feeding the homeless. We're cleaning up the streets. We're doing this, and this on these days. And there's just a plethora of information about what they can do in their community to rebuild the community. They also have these groups that are putting their money together and trying to buy Black Oakland. And because they've, you know, been, you know, gentrification, a lot of people have moved out, obviously, like everywhere, and they can't afford, basically, to, you know, buy the homes at the prices they're selling for now. but there are still pockets of land, and there are a lot of older people who didn't sell out, who still own their land, and they're trying to help them, you know, make sure they don't sell, and are building farms and trying to grow their own food and that kind of thing, and it is really encouraging. There's a black man, as a matter of fact, the radio personality, he said that he has this organization, this is how he's giving back. He has an organization called Tithe the Matter, something about tithe, where he teaches young men, he said a lot of them don't have fathers in the home, to tie tithes and the importance of tithes. And he says it's not, whether you have a tie on or not, you should carry yourself like you do. He said, and his whole premise is basically acting like a gentleman, like anybody can be, you know, an adult and call themselves a man, but you need to be a gentleman. He says, I opened the door for my brother, not just my sister. He said the three principles he teaches is basically respect yourself, respect women, and respect each other, and respect your brothers, you know, sisters. And he was saying how he's just, so that was just like a lot of simple things that they're doing that I think we should all implement, you know, nationwide. And it's the same types of ideas and things that they're doing right now in the community should be spread nationwide. And I just like sharing information of what other people are doing that's working. Like you already said, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, but we do need, you know, to share information. And I think emulate what works and don't emulate what doesn't. I like your idea about, for lack of a better word, brainwashing people into thinking right or doing, you know, doing the right thing, like they, like we've been programmed with these with social media. I think that's an awesome idea if we could somehow be brainwashed to just have the culture collectivity. And, you know, Keith Carson, he's the supervisor I was talking about that gave this event, was talking about nobody is going to do it for us, but we can. And he's a supervisor. He's like, they're not pouring money into us as a collective of people, African-Americans. We can have the Black Caucus all day long, blah, blah, blah. Federal government, they're not going to save us. We have to save ourselves. And that's why he constantly has these types of events. And he's saying, what are you doing? You know, not just what, stop looking to the elected officials, because I don't live on your street. I can't, you know, yeah, thank you for electing me, and I'm, you know, I do everything I can. And he does give these, when he has these events, he does feed you, you know, he does use federal money to, like, give, you know, to black people in that way and host these events, and they never charge to get in, and they always feed you. But like he said, I don't live on your street. And these elected officials or these pastors or everything, everybody else we consider leaders, we always want to look to them for solutions and answers, and that's not where the answers, they are within. We have to look within ourselves and be the change that we want to see. So I thank you for allowing me to speak and for constantly having these calls and pushing your agenda. And I really wish I had some flyers to pass out tonight there, but I'm sure I will have some by the next one, right?
I got things on my to-do list, so we'll work on that. We'll work on it.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thank you.
You.
Uh-huh. Brother Ty.
Hey, how's it going?
What's going on, brother?
Well, kind of enjoyed everything that was going on tonight, all the conversations. I liked hearing what everyone had to say, and I wanted to, you know, kind of put my two cents into it, I suppose.
Okay.
We've already talked about behavior as a collective, you know, we all just need to work on that in summary. I don't think we need to use the fact that we barely have anything as an excuse, because one of my very first memories actually is growing up homeless and learning over time, understanding that money is important to have and to manage and to understand how to do all that and pass that knowledge on to our future, regardless of what our situations are. Resource management is key. With regards to our organization, I mean, it's nice that we have, like, all these ideas and stuff, but I think pretty much the most part is we're trying to make, like, a governing body for, you know, what we represent and what we're about as a people. Things like culture, religion, all those other things, those are, like, derivatives of our goals, primary goal. We'll get those over time because, you know, we'll build trust in the communities and things like that. Yeah, supporting black businesses as well. Those are also derivative effects, residual gains that we get from the fact that we have an organization that people can trust, the fact that we have a governing body back in these organizations and things like that. We can use our money to fund these places once we get to these points, but we need to get to our core base standing first of 2,000 members. our primary focus right now needs to be on gathering as many people as we can so we can get those 2,000 sustainable members. We cannot be doing things with our organization like using our people. I mean, we can volunteer and things like that, but we can't do things that are not going to provide anything sustainable to our organization at this time. You know, we have to be sustainable. But that's pretty much all I wanted to say. Thank you.
You hit the nail on the head, brother. Thank you for summing that up. I think that is a good summary to end the evening in this call. So I want to thank all the brothers and sisters for joining us tonight. And if you are not yet a member and you're thinking about joining us, like I said, visit the website. Click on the website is blackwalletsmatter.org. Click on the menu button in the upper right-hand corner, and you can see the blueprint. The blueprint will explain to you A to Z what this organization is about, and we hope you become a member. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.